Welcome to This Body, a podcast about being in a body. I'm your host, Sophia. Welcome in, fellow humans or otherwise. Perhaps you're in a different kind of body, an alien body. All signs point to there being aliens among us, and it seems every couple of months the internet receives word that any day now, the powers that be will be making an official statement. But they never do. They never do. I guess not only would it freak people out, but it would really throw a spanner in the religious works. Aliens don't really gel with a theistic view of an omnipresent, omnipotent God, so I guess there's never really a good time to let us know they walk among us. Especially not when we have a jihad against Palestinians going and the incumbent ding-dong president fully manipulating the Christian right to nefarious ends. Well, what's been going on? Despite not participating in the news cycle, I've seen Trump's moves on Instagram, putting together his circle jerk government, appointing all sorts of psychos to high office. Jesus Christ on a cross, dripping blood. Fix it, Jesus.
Oh God.
I'd blissfully forgotten his first term and all the chaos in his caucus or his parliament or whatever, and the way he governs. Whew, so insanely. Playing personalities off one another so that every single day there's something in the news about his adult baby antics and someone stomping off and being replaced. But yes, I do remember now, because here we are again. God damn it. So tiring. I really think that if you're paying minute attention, you should set some limits, like maybe check the news just once a day, because by the time tomorrow comes around, the sheer amount of old news, well, it shows you that a lot of the listening and watching is a waste of time. Things change fast, and in a couple of years, the FBI or the CIA or some government agency will pull it all together for us in a giant report. And another big lawsuit against Trump. And we can all learn it then, probably from NPR updates, like that whole James Comey thing last time. You know what? I've actually forgotten what that was about, but I was reminded of him the other day because I watched the Martha Stewart documentary on Netflix, and he was the guy that put Martha behind bars for insider trading. Oh my gosh. Martha Stewart, what an interesting person. I'm not a fan of homemaking and her personal style, but I love an unapologetic bitch with double standards. She's amazing. Can't mention Netflix without mention of the big pantomime the other night. You know the one I'm talking about. When a toddler fought an ancient. The fake fight between Mike Tyson and Jake Paul. The real fights were the ones before those two sad clowns wiggled around in the ring. I watched the whole thing. A true blood sport it was. Mario Barrios and Abel Ramos fought for the welterweight title. It was crazy. Both Mexican kings fought with soul and brutality. My favorite was Barrios because he was wearing all pink. He came in with Aztec dancers while his wife held his tiny baby out in the audience. Wild choice, bringing the baby to the boxing. They smashed the living shit out of each other. It was horrible. I felt like Elizabeth Taylor screaming ringside during the Johansson versus Patterson fight in 1960. In the end, it was a draw. Just like at kindergarten, both boys won, and then they shared an ambulance holding hands. Next up was Ireland's Kate Taylor fighting the champ from Puerto Rico, Amanda Serrano.
I felt Puerto Rican. Y'all know I love me some Puerto Rican. I felt Puerto Rican in this. Rican!
That was a real fucking bloodbath, you guys, because Kate headbutted Amanda. She opened up her head right above her eye. The gash just got more and more massive, round after round. It was fucked up. If it hadn't been for that, Amanda would have won, and in my opinion, should have won. Most people seem to agree with that, but she was amazing afterwards, sending love to her father and screaming that she's going to die in the ring. Okay, then. Who am I to argue? You do you, babe. Amanda Serrano sacrifices everything for boxing, including dating. And to that I say, diva. For those of you who subscribe to the Patreon, you know of my recent foray into having a personal relationship with God and how, due to my Anglican roots, my psyche produces a male God when I think of God. Well, I have a little update on that. Lately, I've been envisaging God as a pair of dogs, a male and female pair of shaggy dogs, because, well, God is dog backwards, and it makes sense to pray to a spiritual dog because dogs are so good. Speaking of the Patreon, a big welcome to new members, BB1979, Electric Sable, Coral, Willa Blue. Welcome aboard the Crazy Train, and thank you to my founding mothers and fathers, Ben, Jay, Anna, Virginia, Amy, Stephanie. You guys rule. I wanted to tell you, but there was never a good time. Has anyone ever said that to you? A lover, perhaps? Or a naughty child after being busted in a lie? If so, you know the impact of someone's deliberate, intentional lies. Intention lies at the heart of lying. But sometimes truths become untruths. When I was a kid in the 80s at school, we had a solar system with 9 planets. The first exoplanet, or planet outside of our solar system, was discovered in 1992. Since then, astronomers have discovered thousands of exoplanets, and now the estimate is 800 billion to 8 trillion for the numbers of planets in the Milky Way galaxy range.
Jesus Christ.
And not only that, but they demoted Pluto from a planet to a dwarf planet because it doesn't fit the criteria to make it a bona fide planet. The International Astronomical Union the International Astronomical Union reclassified Pluto as a dwarf planet in 2006. The definition of a planet states that an object must orbit the sun, be massive enough to be rounded by its own gravity, and have cleared the neighborhood around its orbit. So Pluto got a demotion, but for a long time it was true that our solar system had 9 planets, and we didn't yet have the vision to see beyond that. Science doesn't give us solid facts, it gives us scientific theory, our most robust way of seeing if things make sense given all the factors that we know of. On New Year's Day, 1925, humans discovered the universe as it truly is. That's when Edwin Powell Hubble put it all together, and modern cosmology was born. Until then, astronomers had a myopic view of reality, as happens so often to even the most brilliant minds. They could see things, but they could not comprehend what they were looking at, even though it was staring them right in the face. The special thing about Edwin Powell Hubble was his patience, his caution, his meticulousness, his careful observation. This guy was not one to jump to conclusions. Using the Hooker telescope atop Mount Wilson, which looms over the part of Los Angeles in which I live and where this podcast is being beamed to your ears, Hubble figured out some stuff once and for all. And the great debate of 1920, which was about whether or not the Milky Way was all there was settled once and for all. No, that's not all there is. Hubble's meditative observation had paid off for all of humanity to an incredible and somewhat terrifying end. The universe goes on and on and on, and there are more and more universes. We just didn't know that before. The truth changes. In Octavia Butler's Afro-sci-fi masterpiece, Parable of the Sower, Butler writes, "All that you touch, you change. All that you change, changes you. The only lasting truth is change. God is change." This is why In my opinion, it was evolved for Barack Obama to reassess his stance on same-sex marriage, and why it's devolved to hope for America to go back in time to an ephemeral notion of when it was great for white men. Our navigation never tells us to go backwards, only forward into the great unknown. But luckily for us, we're living in bodies, and our bodies, our minds, our hearts, and our souls are equipped with an internal compass that works when we tap in. A cat doesn't know that the internet exists, but it does. Just because the cat doesn't know that its species is really popular online doesn't mean online ceases to exist. We are looking at the world through our own eyeballs. We see things differently to other people and non-human animals too. We see and experience everything through the matrix of our senses and perceptions, and the nature of truth is fluid. A truthful person, though, someone who's tapped into their words, their thoughts, and actions and works to make them all sing the same song to the world, that person carries integrity, a weight to them. You can feel the straight arrow of truth in another person. You can physically recognize it, and it feels like a safe space. People who are in dialogue with truth feel steady and true. They feel true. So that was a pretty long way to introduce the topic of today's pod. This is the second episode in my Yoga Ethics for Modern Living series, and today we're exploring the second yama, satya, or truth. How many times in life have you experienced a shift in which what was once serving you ceases to do so and instead becomes an obstacle in your path? Yoga teachers and mindfulness pests are always telling their subjects to let go of what no longer serves, right? Well, what is truth? How can we tune our antenna towards it? How can we move with skill through the seasons of change in our lives? Well, let's get into it. Actually, before we do, I just want to say I'm so grateful for you listeners. I looked at the stats for the pod the other day. It's not something that I do often because I don't think it behooves one's morale or creativity to be checking on things like metrics and numbers. But I did look, and whilst this body isn't by no means call her daddy, it's still very amazing to see the downloads and the streams. I know that each number represents an actual human being, one of you, a real person. So thank you so much. And if you've ever heard something on here that has been useful or given you a laugh or entertained you in some way, I'd like to ask you to share it with a friend. Go to the three little dots on the top right of wherever you're listening now and text it to someone. It doesn't seem like much, but it's a lot, and it helps the pod to grow in a nice, organic, rootsy kind of way. Thank you for supporting the pod, and a special thank you to those of you who are part of the Patreon. I see you. I salute you, my comrade. Okay, now let's begin. Satya is the second yama in the yogic principles of the yamas and niyamas. If you've been following along with the pod, you'll remember the first yama, ahimsa or nonviolence, and how truth or satya goes hand in hand with ahimsa, nonviolence. Strikes me as very telling that Mike Tyson tested his truth the other day by fighting a man 30 years younger than him, presumably thinking he could win. It's interesting that the forum was boxing, an explicitly violent sport, and the truth of the matter eluded not just Tyson, who at 58 really should know better, but millions of Tyson fans who held a candle for days gone by and a misplaced hope for their own futures as aging men. If Tyson can knock out a 29-year-old, physical prowess and eternal potency for all men would be assured. Well, we all know how it went down. Jake drove a car to the ring, singing Phil Collins to get psyched up. Nerd. And after showing his entire buttocks to us all, Tyson looked scared as he entered the ring. Beyond a bit of stumbling around, nothing much happened, except Mike kept biting his glove, which made him look like an infant. And at the end of the day, it was probably all a setup for these two sad culture clowns to make a ton of dough, but as an example of the folly of man, it was a good one. When you wake up and choose violence, chances are your ability to grasp and handle the truth is severely impeded. I still like boxing, though. It's just that this one wasn't a real sport. So, truth is a moving target. When Mike Tyson was 20, he was unstoppable. His body, the home he lived in, was at its peak. Where he failed in the arena of life was not moving skillfully from season to season in that body and being honest with himself about the undeniable facts of the physical. There are many other avenues for us to explore beyond the physical. In fact, it's not until we're a bit older that a lot of other ideas and interests start to unspool inside of us. There's a time and a place, you know? Knowing where we are in time and space is the key to being a skillful person. There are so many ways that we mask the truth in our lives. A really salient thing is filters on Instagram, the masks that we wear, the truths that we hide from ourselves and others. There's this woman that I know from New Zealand who came to America to become a tapping influencer, like tapping your body to produce a shift in the nervous system. This woman gets people in via the tapping stuff and then upsells them on her courses and phone calls. $10,000 for 6 phone calls. There's one course that promises to give you the perfect sexy body when everything else has failed. Well, here's the truth. Every single picture of this woman on her social media is doctored by really crazy filters. I've played with the filters she uses. They make me look sort of like a grotesque supermodel. It's all a lie. It's all bullshit. New journalism pioneer Joan Didion has a famous quote that people are very fond of. We tell ourselves stories in order to live. This quote has always sat uncomfortably with me. It makes me uneasy that humans have a need to make sense of everything and compartmentalize and understand. There's like no respect for the mystery. Joan was a wonderful writer, definitely one of my absolute favorites, but she had a very journalistic, masculine approach. And that's probably what helped make her successful as a woman in the 60s and 70s. She was married to John Gregory Dunn, and together they formed this tight little unit, working together and sitting atop the social hierarchy. But Joan told herself stories in order to live, one of them being that she didn't long for something other than Dunn and marriage to him. In her essay about Howard Hughes, Joan wrote of the apparent bottomless gulf between what we say we want and what we do want, between what we officially admire and secretly desire, between, in the larger sense, the people we marry and the people we love. In the new book, Didion and Babbitts, writer Lily Analick writes extensively about Joan's real true love, a man called Noel Parmentel Jr., a charming, hard-drinking, womanizing man who helped Joan get her first book published. He didn't want to marry her, so he set her up with this hanger-on of his, John Gregory Dunn. And Joan and John's marriage was considered one of the most revered in American literature. So, they were like early influencers hiding the truth and presenting something other than the truth. Life is complicated. Some people tell themselves stories in order to live, but in yogic philosophy, it's not recommended. The truth can be terrifying, but you can't change it if you're not aware of it. What it means to be truthful is a complex and variating question. It's about there being an integrity between thoughts, words, and actions and intentions. Satya means being it. So there's less dualism between who I am and what I say and do. Authenticity about the self, not just manifested through the words that I might speak, but in a deeper way as an expression of who I am. Words, thoughts, deeds, all in integrity together. It's connected to the wholeness of us as beings. Sat means absolute truth. Relative truth is what we understand and what comes out of our mouths. And then there's people pleasing. So people pleasing and being a nice person is to wear a favorable disguise. And the label nice person and its actions are also a disguise. Truth demands integrity to life and to our own self, and that's more than not just telling like a simple lie. Nice is a facade, which is a lie, hiding lies. In her book, The Yamas and Niyamas, Deborah Adele writes, nice is an illusion. It's an imposed image of what one thinks they should be. It's a packaging of self in a presentable box imposed by an outer authority. People who are nice hold truth inside until they reach a breaking point, and then they become dangerously inappropriate. Does that sound like anyone that you know? It certainly does to me. I'm not a nice person, so my dangerously inappropriate behavior can't be attributed to that, but I have had many, many, many nice people behave in dangerously inappropriate ways. And I would guess so have you. Maybe you've been one yourself. So it's about matching who I am and what I do. Having a clarity about my intentions. The broad brushstroke of truth is intention. So you can't know the full truth, but you can intend to be truthful. There's a harmony to it. It's like a band playing together, an orchestra playing together, a congruence in action and intent. And that's yoga, an increasing integrity and unity. It already exists, but it's manifested outwardly by our actions, by bringing it into being. So that's a good use of the idea of manifestation, which has been very corrupted of late. Bringing something that already exists inside us out. Making the implicit explicit. Not manifesting something outwardly, materially, like the culture of manifesting a dream reality, which is just delusional and it's at the expense of actual reality. So that's not it. We don't control outside of ourselves very much at all. We control ourselves to a certain extent, and that sphere of influence radiates outwards, and that's it. Our speech is the intermediary between ourselves and our actions. It's the bridge, right? So in yoga, the breath is the bridge between the body and the mind, and we focus on the breath for that reason. In life, life off the mat, it's speech. Communication between ourselves and the world that we inhabit, the people in it, the situations that come up. And communication is respect. When we refuse to communicate honestly with ourselves, that's disrespectful. Buddhism talks about right speech. Yoga talks about satya. How to speak the truth, be the truth, and stay connected. Because there's a fear, probably like our biggest fear, is of disconnection and conflict. So it's like learning a new art, like a martial art or an instrument, how to play in a band, how to master a new recipe. If you want to win the fight, you got to get in the ring. Going inwards first before speaking, that's important. That's where we can utilize ahimsa, nonviolence, right? So before we speak, checking in with what's alive in us at that moment, what's happening in the emotional landscape, the physical, the intellectual body. This is why the physical practice of asana, yoga, teaches us so much about how to live. And then there's the way that the genders, men and women, use language differently and have been socialized to use it differently. That's a rabbit hole to go down another time, but we have needs and we need to be able to explicitly express them. We need to be direct and we need to know our true selves so that we can best express those needs. Sometimes we have needs that we don't know how to get met. And we're also dealing with feelings and expressing feelings. But feelings, they change. They're totally changeable. So, yeah, communication can be very challenging. Everyone has different strengths. But once we get real with ourselves and stop trying to manipulate the outside world for ourselves and tune in, we can change our inner state so that we can become more in harmony with the world around us, which we by and large have very little influence over. Radical self-honesty will lead to radical self-trust. So it begins with our intention before we speak. That's where rule number one, ahimsa, nonviolence, becomes the spouse of number two, satya, truth, like yin and yang. They go together. I speak my truth. I don't speak the truth. Marinate on that. I have my truth, you have yours. But we both have hearts, and the heart is like a flower and it can open. The heart can give grace. The heart can hold a lot and grasp nothing. The yogic guide is to look at others with soft eyes. When others feel seen, they soften towards you, or that's the idea. You know, in this day and age, it's all a big what the fuck.
What the fuck is going on in here on this day?
In any case, the body keeps the score and the body wants homeostasis, and that requires our hearts to open, our minds to expand, to see the other point of view. We don't have to agree, but we don't have to cling to things. And then we can be more at peace, our communication more harmonic, the way we move through the world a little more easeful, a little bit. I know it's hard. I used to catch the bus in LA for the first 2 years that I lived here. Every day was a wild ride. And I started experimenting with picturing everyone who got on the bus as my mother. It really opens your heart to look at every person that way. You feel for them. You understand they're a human being full of folly and love and foolishness and fear and hope and all of that. Anyway, it made the bus ride a little less gross. Oh my gosh, you guys, if you like this show, you should join me over on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/thisbodypodcast and join up for extra body. You'll get early access to episodes, 2 bonus episodes a month, random drops here and there, and access to old seasons. And it's a little more savage over there. It's just like the free podcast, but juicier. So go to patreon.com/thisbodypodcast. That's patreon.com/thisbodypodcast and sign up for extra body. You'll love it. Thanks, Tiger. A lie is an intention to mislead, but lack of truth also comes from lack of self-awareness. Self-analysis is really the core component of the yoga ethical system. It's really the whole of it. And later in the series, we'll talk about the prescribed ways and means of cultivating self-awareness. Yep, yoga's got it all covered. Lack of truth can come from lack of self-awareness. So for now, just remember to check yourself before you wreck yourself. Being a nice person is one of those lacks of awareness. An inability to connect to your own feelings. And also using speech in a casual, kind of sloppy way, like saying that you're going to do something and then not following through because you want to be perceived as being a nice person instead of just telling the truth. So there's this idea that there is conflict between telling the truth and not harming someone, but there is no contradiction between non-harming and truthfulness. When I don't speak the external truth to others, eventually, even with the intent not to harm, it does harm because it erodes the relationship and the trust. Now, something you're taught when you're in yoga school, training to teach, is one of the signs that you're evolving on the path is that you no longer feel the same affinity with certain people and situations in your life. If you're studying yoga, you start to want to refrain from things that most people engage in, like drinking, getting crazy on drugs. You're trying to refrain from gossip, and you're trying to shine your awareness on your vices. You're looking at greed and jealousy and lust and anger and things like that. This is what most of society is engaged in. So unless you're lucky enough to be in a healthy community, being on a spiritual path can be a real loner vibe. And there can be a susceptibility to cults. All those people who aligned themselves with Kundalini yoga, for example, for like the last 50, 60 years. As long as we stay within the unity of the group, we experience the innocence of belonging. But the truth of our freedom, it carries a price. The loss of belonging to the innocent group. When we're living truthfully, we have more energy and vitality. When we're concealing our true selves, it takes a lot of energy. And when we're out and out bullshitting other people, that takes a lot of energy and resources. Why bother? Just drop the bullshit. Utilize ahimsa, non-harming, to the best of your ability. Then have faith and just let the chips fall where they may. You can't control it. You can't control other people. So just do yourself a solid and stop trying. Things get complicated, obviously. Say you're gay and you're young, and if you come out, your parents will kick you out and you'll be destitute. You need to be skillful here. At some point, the tension between concealing yourself and staying safe is going to come to a breaking point. So in a situation like this, I would prepare for a time in the future where I can be financially independent of my parents, set that as a goal, and move towards it with intention and integrity. Knowing where you are in time and space will prevent you from shooting your own foot off, you know? Life is complicated sometimes. You have the tools to navigate it, though. It's not easy to be responsible for yourself. That's why yoga is called the warrior's path. It's not actually appropriate for everyone. Only a really small percentage of people, really, but there's a whole lot to be learnt by the spiritual layman, you and me. Anytime we aren't truthful, it breaks down the fabric of our relationships, comes back, plays out, bites us in the ass. Anything you're putting on your credit card now will cost you more later. A credit card limit is just a hope and a prayer, really. Same with a marital contract. You can plan for a happy outcome, but it's not a foregone conclusion. You might lose your income. You might fall out of love. The relationship you have to yourself and to your truth is undeniably the most important one because everything radiates outwards from there. Know thyself. The phrase was inscribed on the temple of Apollo in Delphi. This philosophical maxim has been discussed for thousands of years. Socrates was into it, writing his own interpretation. You should write yours. In Hamlet, Shakespeare wrote a bunch of stuff, one of them being, to thine own self be true. This above all, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night the day. Thou canst not be false to any man. The conflict between needing to grow and the need to belong, well, we belong to a lot of groups. Our gender, our culture, country, sexuality, race, class, age group, family, work. So many places to fit in. And to be part of these groups, there are rules that shape the group and give the group its identity, which is fine. Until everything works okay, until conflict arises between the need to grow and the need to belong. And it's hard. A sacrifice has to happen somewhere. Something has got to give somewhere. And there's no right or wrong here. The yogic prescription is about tuning into your inner voice, listening to it, acting on it. It's about self-respect. Truth is all about respect. Self-respect, respect for others, respect for this life. And it's always good to do the right thing the first time if you can see what that right thing is. President Reagan refused to face the truth of AIDS until over 100,000 human lives had been taken because he was afraid of the truth and what it would demand of him. And he was right to be afraid because he wasn't equipped to handle the truth. American history is being taught wrong now, sugarcoating things so as to not upset the children of racists. The truth is disruptive. In my opinion, life is more satisfying when we're willing to be raw with reality rather than construct barriers to soften it. We are built for it. We have all the tools to handle the truth. In America, we construct a lot to shield us from the rawness of reality, and it leads to a dulling and to depression and anxiety. It makes sense we would become anxious and depressed when kept from the truth. We know it's there. We can sense it being concealed. Our bodies know. Babes, if you enjoy this podcast, be sure to rate, share, and subscribe. You can listen on Apple, Spotify, and Amazon Music. And you can find me at Sophia Forever. The pod's on IG too. Thanks, Tiger. Some last words on Satya. Notice in life the difference between being nice and being truthful. Compare a truthful experience with a nice one. Notice how it feels in your body and play with expressing yourself. Make contact with your inner truth, your inner child, your inner alien. Figure out what ideas or behaviors were useful once but have long since expired and no longer serve you, and make a change. Wherever possible, speak the truth the first time so you don't have to walk a convoluted path that may undermine trust in your relationships. Any fool knows if you don't have trust, you don't have anything, and once it's lost, it's often gone forever. We don't really need to tell ourselves stories in order to live, though it has a nice ring to it, and it sounds true. If we walk the line of truth and the big mystery, there's no need for fiction unless it's in a novel.